Leon Logothetis was on a track to go into the family business from his youngest days, and as expected, that's exactly what he did, filling his days brokering deals in the shipping industry. And from the outside in, you know, he kind of had everything. He had a great job, making great money, good position, a clear direction in life. But from the inside looking out, he was dying a little bit more every day, fiercely lonely and falling apart inside. So he made a very radical decision to walk away from the family business, away from the legacy that had been laid out before him, to carve his own path. Where did that lead him? Well, first, to land on the East Coast of the United States and decide that he was going to find his way across the entire country without cash, sustaining himself only on the kindness of others. This journey actually became a film and then led to a round-the-world kindness adventure on a motorcycle with a sidecar that he calls Kindness One, and which, of course, was painted a bright, shiny yellow. But this time, the stakes were also raised. Not only could he only live on the kindness of others, he also committed to giving back along the way. Some of the stories that unfolded there were just really astonishing. That journey became the basis of a book, and then the Kindness Diaries series, which can now be seen on Netflix. And Leon also has a new book called Go Be Kind. It's kind of more of a daily journal of fun and easy ways to be kind, simple ways to integrate kindness into your everyday life. So excited to share this conversation with you today. I'm Jonathan Fields, and this is Good Life Project.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Good Life Project is sponsored by the ADHD Aha podcast, hosted by Laura Key. So I've been kind of amazed at how many conversations I've had lately with people later in life who are wondering if they have ADHD. It can be hard to understand what ADHD is by looking at a list of symptoms. So in each episode of ADHD Aha, you'll hear heartfelt interviews about the unexpected, emotional, even funny ways that ADHD symptoms surface for adults. Like the recent episode with ADHD coach Emily Weinberg, which really resonated with me. Her story about how she was thinking she was, quote, just lazy before her diagnosis because she wasn't hyperactive really struck a chord. Her feeling frozen and stuck ruminating on mounting to-do lists is just so relatable for so many people. It's really validating to hear others articulate those experiences. Each episode of ADHD Aha features candid tales of realizing that you or a loved one has ADHD. You'll hear the unexpected, emotional ways that it manifests in adults through heartfelt interviews. ADHD Aha captures the authentic human experience of ADHD. So if you want a fresh, personal perspective that embraces the messiness, listen to ADHD Aha. Search for ADHD Aha in your podcast app. That's ADHD Aha with Aha spelled A-H-A. It's an aha moment you won't miss. Your family is part Greek, part English. You were brought up in London, though, and under the influence of all of this. Tell me a bit more, just sort of coexisting within these two different cultures.
Yeah, so I mean, I grew up in London, but my family is Greek. But you know, if someone were to say to me, Leon, I probably shouldn't admit this, but I'm going to say it anyway. If someone was to say to me, do you feel more Greek or more English? I mean, look, you know, I spent, and I hope my dad's not listening to this, but I spent, you know, a good chunk of my life in England. So I would say I feel more English, but you know, it's, I also feel Greek. So I kind of, it's kind of in the middle. Yeah. I'm like Gringlish.
What parts of you feel English, or what elements do you feel like are parts of yourself do you feel like are distinctly English, and what parts of you do you see sort of like living like, oh, this is the Greek side of me coming out?
So distinctly English is my fanaticism around football. So I support Liverpool, and literally they mean a lot to me. And if anyone is listening and they're English, they get it. And the Greek part of me, I don't know, maybe my adventurous side, maybe my, you know, Greeks are very family orientated, and on some level I am as well. So I would say that.
Yeah. And so as a kid growing up in that household, what are you into? What captured your interest? Other than football.
Other than football.
If there's anything in the room,
you know,
for anything
really,
else.
Really, as a kid, there was nothing except football.
That was it.
I mean, you know, I was literally, I played football, I watched football, I read about football. Kids used to come up to me because I was like an encyclopedia, because all I did was read about football. So they'd say, like, who won the FA Cup in 1988? And I would tell them. And now I can't remember who won the FA Cup in 1988.
So you were the stats guy, like obsessed with knowing every player, every number, all the history, who did what, when, and where. Were you a player also?
Yeah, I was. I played for my school and my college, and I thought I was pretty good. But I always wanted to be a soccer player. Mm. That was my dream, but it didn't happen. So that was the end of that one.
We had a couple years back, we had Sir Ken Robinson in here, who actually grew up in Liverpool. And but at the age of three or four, was one of the final people who got polio, literally like a month before the vaccine came out, ended up in Ireland. He recounted the story of how in his family, he was the one who was sort of like a very young age known as like the football prodigy. Mm-hmm. And then everything changed in this one moment. But he said his entire family was just massively obsessed. And I think his brothers actually ended up playing pro as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So you end up in college. You're still obsessed with all this. And what did you actually study in college or in university?
Business management.
Yeah.
But literally, I went to college and I tried to like study as many non-business classes as I could. But I was studying business management.
What was that about?
Well, I didn't want to be in business. I mean, I didn't want to sit behind a desk. Even then I knew, but I didn't have the courage or the strength or the foresight or whatever to, or the emotional intelligence to realize that I was going down the wrong road for me, you know, not for others.
Yeah. So the business classes were something where it's like, I'm going to do what I think my family wants me
exactly,
to do.
Exactly. Exactly. That's exactly what it was.
Yeah. I think so many people feel that too.
Absolutely.
It's like life by other people's expectations. Mm. So you end up getting your degree in business then?
Yep. Then I start working as a broker in London.
Right.
And I spend a couple of years there. And
what were you actually doing? What was your...
Do you know, primarily it was actually a ship broker.
Ship.
But people don't really know what that is. So I just say a broker. I was kind of like, you know, buying and selling commodities and putting them on ships and getting the ship from A to B. And that's the majority of what I did. But I did do some stockbroking, but primarily that.
Hmm. And that was family business?
Yeah.
So this was also for you. It's not just I'm sitting at a desk, I'm earning my living. But was there an assumption built into that? Like, this is just part of my destiny?
Absolutely.
And where would that lead? Had you have stayed, where would that have? Like, what was the expectation that would lead to?
I mean, look, the reality is that the way I saw it, I would have to sit behind this desk for 50 years, make as much money as I could, have a family, go to church, and just be a good English Greek boy. And that was like hell. So I couldn't fathom that was going to be my life. I really couldn't, but I didn't have the courage to break free. So I just sat behind that desk and, you know, on the outside I had everything you could ever want, but on the inside I had nothing and I didn't want that.
Mm. So then were you working with your dad at the same time?
Yes.
Also? So then it's not just you doing this thing because, you know, like he expects you to do with the family, but it's actually you're there day to day together also.
Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
Like there's nowhere to hide, basically.
No, there was not.
Did your dad have any sense at all that there was something else brewing inside of you?
Do you know, I don't think he did. I don't think anyone did. I mean, you know, sometimes we wear a mask and the mask tells the world, oh, everything's okay. But the truth is that we're not okay. And that's what happened to me. I was wearing this mask that told everyone I was fine. They had no idea that I was crumbling inside.
Mm. How is that actually showing up in you sort of emotionally or physically?
Depression, overeating, drinking too much, just doing all the things that as humans we do in order not to feel.
So what happens? How does that stop?
Well, it stopped. The beginning of the stop, let's say, was I watched the movie The Motorcycle Diaries, which is a romanticized version of Che Guevara traveling around South America relying on kindness. And there was something about that movie. And in the beginning of that movie, he says to his dad wants him to be a doctor, to stay in Buenos Aires and be a doctor. And Che says to him, no, I'm sorry, I'm leaving. And he gets on a motorbike and goes on an amazing adventure. And I was like, oh my goodness, there's another way to live, literally. So after watching that movie, a few months later, I quit my job and started to travel the world relying on kindness. So basically, I took what he did and I think, you know, sometimes people say to me, how on earth did you do that? How on earth did you leave your job? What the hell was going through your mind? And the answer is really pain is what propelled me. Pain is what pushed me to do this because I was in so much emotional pain that I felt like I had no choice but to do something different. And that's what I did. I don't think I was consciously thinking that it would end up here, like, you know, with shows and books and all this kind of stuff. But I knew that I didn't want to sit behind that desk. I knew I am not sitting behind this desk. I don't care what happens. It's not happening anymore.
How long was it between when you sit down and watch this thing and something starts to flicker inside and you actually work your last day at that job?
The moment I left the movie, I finished watching the movie, it was instant. I was like, this
you
has,
knew.
I knew. Yeah. This is, I can never live like this again. And I would say, I can't remember exactly, but I would say a couple of months from the moment I watched that to the moment where it all came to an end.
What's going on in your mind at that point? And are you also making preparations or like behind the
scenes? Yeah, I was making preparations behind the scenes. And I was just, you know, I just had to find a way to free myself from this is, I don't want to use this word, but from the prison that I found myself in, you know, again, I had everything on the outside, but I was in an emotional prison. And there were many of us like that, that get stuck in this emotional prison. It was hell. You know, we seem to, in our society, we look at people on the outside who have everything and we're like, how on earth could you be upset? How on earth could you be sad? How on earth could you be depressed? How on earth could you feel alone? But the reality is money doesn't hide or fix the internal brokenness of a human being. Doesn't mean that it doesn't help to live a better life. It does. But it wasn't good. And it kind of all came as a kid because I was bullied really quite profoundly. And that was when it started to feel alone. And for years and years and years, I felt alone. And it kind of followed me in my adulthood. And
I think a lot of people have that shared experience also, you know, that experience both when they're younger and it becomes a part of you, but it doesn't become a part of you that's sort of external, but you're wearing it on the inside for years until in some way, shape or form, like it needs to be processed through and out. And that takes, for a lot of people, that takes the form of pain and suffering and illness. For you, it sounds like it was causing a lot of pain or it was underneath a lot of what you were feeling, but you externalize it, you sort of brought it to the surface and used it almost as energy to create outer change. When you show up and you know that you need to have the conversation with your dad, what does that moment look like?
Well, look, I just told him that I couldn't do it anymore and that I was leaving. And he wasn't entirely sure that I was well in the head. He's like, are you okay? Like, what? He couldn't get it. He didn't understand it. He was like, look, he didn't say this, but I felt it. This is your path. You know, this is what we do. And he just didn't get it, which is fine. You know, then I expected him to get it. Now I understand clearly that he was never going to get it. I mean, he gets it now, but he was never going to get it in those moments. Because just different generations.
Yeah, different value set. You know? Yeah, and I wonder also when that happens, especially when you have a parent that is more either war era or depression era, where the idea of pursuing a livelihood or a life that was built primarily around meaning and purpose, you know, that was secondary because you were trying to keep the family alive and put it, like, nothing else mattered. You were brought up in a way mm-hmm. where there was, you know, it was all about keeping the family safe, putting food on the table and a roof over the head. And then when the next generation comes along and says, but I want something different, I need the existential part of it to be satisfied mm-hmm. too. I've had so many conversations with people who have sort of like had that generational conversation. And it's always really hard because you spend so much time in these two different worlds. And it's interesting with your dad too. I wonder how much of that was about him having a certain expectation about the legacy being continued.
It was probably a bit of everything. And he thought that my future and my happiness would be secured if I stayed in the business. I knew that would be the death of me, but I couldn't clearly kind of convey that to him in those moments. And sometimes you have to do something even when everyone else feels it's wrong. And you have to have the strength of character and the strength of belief in yourself that what you're doing is right. And you just keep on going and you don't let anyone else stop you because you know yourself better than they do.
Yeah, I think that's a really hard thing to do. Had you shared with any close friends what was going on with you before this moment?
Do you know what? I didn't really have any close friends to be able to share it with. It was a totally different life that I lived back then, where there was no connection, there was no hope. Again, on the outside, I had everything. Yeah. I'm just talking about the internal lack of hope. And it was hell. My own private hell.
Yeah. So you make that call, you have the conversation, the door closes behind you and the new door opens into this new adventure, new life. In your mind, you have, okay, so this is Leon's version of the Motorcycle Diaries. What are the first steps towards that? This is not like you've been training for this your whole life. Yeah, this is like brand spanking new.
So basically the first thing I did was I actually ended up hitchhiking from New York, Times Square to the Hollywood sign. And I had no money. I had like $5. And I brought a few friends along. We ended up like connecting with all these unbelievable people. And I had learned through the news, through business that I'd been doing, that people were mean, that people were not kind, that we lived in this terrible world. And I started meeting people that were like angels, just normal humans on the street. And I was just totally in shock. It just opened me up to the nth degree. And it made me realize really that there was another way to be. And that there were people out there living with their hearts. And it was literally like you'd put me on an alien planet. And it was so refreshing that I never wanted to stop living from that place. Of course, you know, and I'm not perfect. No one's perfect. And there were bad days and there were good days. And there were many bad days, even after I left my job. But that was like a witness to a new way of living that was very profound.
Once you started into that journey, what was the first interaction that you can recall that really opened your eyes, opened your heart to, wow, this is like the people can be different. Things can be different. Something just happened to me that I never saw coming, and I will never be the same.
Looking back at it, there was I was in Times Square, so literally on the first day, and no one would help me. So I'd spent like hours trying to get people to talk to me, and they wouldn't.
And for those who haven't been to Times Square in New York, like if you're local, you don't talk to anybody.
Exactly.
You walk fast with your head down. Exactly. It's like anyone who tries to stop you for any reason, you just pretend they don't exist. It's sort of like the rule of Times Square for locals.
Exactly. I didn't realize that, but yeah. I learned the hard way. And it was a couple of hours and I was thinking to myself, well, what am I doing? You know, I have ended up in the middle of Times Square with basically no money, having to get to the Hollywood sign. Everyone who told me that what I was about to do is right. I am insane. I have to go home. Clearly, I wasn't going to go home because I had set my mind on this. So I ended up meeting this guy who started talking to me. And it turns out that he was a pimp. And we started talking and I had no idea who he was. But this guy was so kind and so loving. And he said to me, he actually took me to New Jersey. Now, he took me on the path And I didn't realize that the path was free anyway. And it was back then. But, you know, he took me to the path and he said, this is, you know, I wanted to get you out of New York. Here you are in New Jersey. And, you know, it was amazing because in the old days, I would have looked at him. Well, I didn't know what he did for a job, but I would have probably looked at him and thought, I don't want to talk to this guy. But it was so different. He was a very kind-hearted human being. And I was like, well, if he can be like that, then I can be like that. And if he can be like that, I wonder who else is like him or even better on my journeys. So that was kind of an opening moment that really changed things.
Mm. I mean, it's interesting too that you offered that example. It's because it speaks to me about how complex we are as human beings. Mm. That in probably all of us, there are sides that can be one way in one context and a profoundly different way in another context. I've had friends who are criminal lawyers and they're representing some really dark people who've done terrible things, and yet they treat them like these people who are, you know, like felons, violent, would treat their lawyer or their representative in the most nurturing, loving way. It really is fascinating how complicated we are.
We are certainly complicated, and no one is perfect. And we have a trait in us. Maybe it's a human trait that we like building people up and then pulling them down. Mm. And there isn't a single human being that you can't pull down if you want to. Instead of trying to pull people down, let's try and lift them up.
Yeah. What was the idea behind doing this with almost nothing in your pocket?
Do you know what? As I look back at it, I realize what it was, because I grew up with whatever I wanted materialistically within reason, but no love. Well, I didn't feel it. Yeah, I felt alone. So I did these journeys where I flipped it and I had no money and all I could do was rely on people's love and people's heart. And I didn't consciously do that when I started these journeys. But as I look back, it's just so interesting how I did it. Had money, then took away my money. Had no connection and made myself live on connection.
Yeah. It's almost like your subconscious mind knew what you needed.
Exactly. That's exactly what it did.
So fascinating.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Good Life Project is sponsored by Lumi. So listen, we have all had those awkward moments where a BO strikes at the worst possible time. I'm often actually out in nature when I'm exercising, so I don't even notice it when I'm out. And then I walk in the door, kind of start to wrinkle my nose, and then I'm like, oh, wait a minute, that's actually me. That is why I'm so thankful I discovered Lumi Whole Body Deodorant. This revolutionary product, it was actually invented by an OBGYN who wanted a solution for her patients struggling with private odor. But Lumi doesn't just work, quote, down there. It provides incredible 72-hour protection for your entire body using mandelic acid. I kid you not, this stuff is a game changer. Lumi is safe and effective for pits, for feet, you name it. And as someone who's tried it, I can attest that it seriously works. The fresh scents are just an added bonus. So if you're ready to say goodbye to BO for good, try Lumi's Starter Pack. It comes with a solid stick deodorant, cream tube deodorant, two free products of your choice like mini body wash, wash and deodorant wipes, and free shipping. As a special offer for our listeners, new customers get $5 off a Lumi starter pack with the code GOODLIFE at LumiDeodorant.com. Don't miss your chance to experience the relief of true full body freshness that equates to over 40% off your starter pack when you visit LumiDeodorant.com or just click the link in the show notes and use the code GOODLIFE. Good Life Project is sponsored by Quince. So my wife actually originally introduced me to Quince because she loves their clothing, and I have been hooked ever since. I literally lived in their Mongolian cashmere ribbed beanie and pullover hoodie pretty much all winter. And as the weather warms up, I wanted more breathable summer pieces without overpaying. And Quince has just the super high quality items like linen shirts, performance polos, activewear at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Quince partners directly with top factories, cutting out the middleman to pass savings to customers. Actually just ordered a new European linen long sleeve button down shirt. Super excited to get that. And I'm always just so amazed at how they can keep their prices so affordable while the quality remains really high. So if you're looking to upgrade your wardrobe, I highly recommend you try Quince. Go to quince.com/GLP for free shipping on your order and a 365-day return. That's quince.com/GLP to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/GLP or just click the link in the show notes. Trust me, your wardrobe will thank you.
You said you started this with a couple of friends?
Yeah.
Were they with you the whole time?
So basically what happened was the first adventure, I had a guy who worked in TV and I called him up and I said, look, I want to do this show. And he's like, well, you know, first of all, that's insane. You're never going to make it to the Hollywood sign. And secondly, no one's ever going to buy this show. And I was like, well, I don't care. I want to do it. And he's like, all right. So, you know, he was like in the TV world. We bought a few cameras and we just went across America. And I did, you know, the connecting, and he did the filming.
So the whole time you're recording this
Yes.
whole thing, as you start to move across the country, did you notice also differences at all? I'm curious, sort of like regional differences in how people were open or closed down or abundant or scarcity oriented or super generous or not.
Definitely. So in the bigger cities, people are less, more standoffish in the, but you know, as long, you can get through the shell, but it's harder. And in the smaller towns, people just were so friendly and so loving. Look, my English accent helped. The moment you start speaking English, they're like, oh my God, we love the Queen, or whatever it is. So I would say in the smaller places, and Midwest was beautiful. And then when you got to the bigger cities, people were walking fast, like you said, about Times Square. They were just like walking. They didn't want to have anything to do with you.
Yeah. And then LA, everyone lives in their cars.
Exactly. Exactly.
World.
They do.
What time of year was this?
End of summer.
All right.
So the weather was good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It wasn't too bad.
And what year was that?
That was 2005.
Okay. And the world has changed a lot since then.
Yes, it has.
So you end up, how long did it take you actually to get to LA?
You know what? It only took a month.
Because is that what you thought?
I thought it would take a bit longer.
Yeah.
But you see, there was a guy in Galesburg, Illinois, who bought me a train ticket. I couldn't accept money. You couldn't give me money, only kindness. And he bought me a train ticket to Denver, which is like 18 hours. So you had these moments where people would drive you for like 12 hours and you would, you know, a lot of distance would be covered.
Hmm. That's amazing. So you end up a month later in LA, walk up to the Hollywood sign.
I did. I couldn't touch it because it's illegal. I didn't want to be arrested.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But I went. I was close to it.
Yeah, yeah. It's like an inch away.
Exactly.
As you're walking up to it, what's going through your mind?
I was like, it was a sense of achievement. It was a sense of wonder. It was a sense of, wow, here I have an opportunity to really live a life that I've always wanted to live. And it was also a letdown in a way because I knew that that was it. Like, what am I going to do now? Like I was at the Hollywood sign. Okay, great. Now what? Like it was weird. I didn't have any plans. My plans were to get to the Hollywood sign. There were no after plans.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. You hear about Olympic athletes who go to the Olympics, actually medal and fall into deep depressions because the thing that they've been striving for and working and devoting all their energy to for so long, they've gotten everything they wanted. Mm. And yet they wake up the next morning and that soul driver of purpose is gone. And along with it, sort of almost a part of their identity. Did you experience any of that immediately after?
I definitely experienced some depression, not major anymore, but some depression after the journeys.
Yeah.
Because you have this purpose, you have this sense of destiny, let's say. You're going to get there, you're not going to give up, you're going to keep going, you're connecting with people, and then you finish. And then what? Like, it's also easy to burn out because you keep on doing these adventures, you keep on connecting with people, you keep on going and meeting all these and having all these amazing adventures. And then you come home and it's like, well, now what? It's like the adrenaline stops and you wake up in the morning with no real sense of purpose. That used to affect me a lot, but not really so much anymore, I'd say.
Mm. So where do you go from there? I mean, how do you go from that place to saying, okay, this was an incredible month, but it needs to become something bigger and something enduring?
You lay spiritual roots as far into the earth as you can reach, meaning that one of the things that I've learned is that whatever success you have on the outside, if you have no grounding, if you have no spiritual practice, if you have no sense of belonging in your community, it doesn't matter how successful you are, because you'll wake up with a hole in your heart. So I would say, find a practice, find a way to kind of spiritually nourish yourself beyond the world of money, beyond the world of fame, beyond the world of success.
Mm. What did that look like for you?
A lot of walking through pain, a lot of therapy, a lot of meditation, a lot of retreats, a lot of solo travel, a lot of silent meditation, a lot of tears, a lot of many things to break free from the way that society tells us we have to be.
So during that process, what assumptions, like what sort of core level assumptions and beliefs shifted in you?
Well, the first and most profound thing that shifted for me was that, how do I say this? There is a river of love flowing through us all. And the moment you find it, and the moment you take a swim in that river, everything changes. I don't know if that's explained it well, but there's a vibration of love. There's a vibration of beingness that we've lost. We're not connected to it. And the Native Americans, I think, were connected to it. And that was their superpower. And, you know, maybe our superpower in the society we live in is building buildings, sending rockets to the moon and people to the moon. But we've forgotten how to be human. And I would urge people to try and find their humanity once again by taking a jump in that river and swimming.
Mm. As you awaken to that, building on the journey that you had just taken, and then you got to look forward and you're like, okay, so amazing experience, something shifting profoundly within me. A new realization to the fact that there is this river of love that exists within me and between us if we allow it to flow freely. Then you got to look forward and say, okay, and what am I going to do with all of this?
Well, it's interesting because I finished that journey in 2005. And from 2005 until 2013, I had no idea there was a river. If you told me there was one, I wouldn't have believed you. If you'd shown it to me, I wouldn't have taken a swim. My point being is I was in Hollywood. I was living the Hollywood life. I was doing all the wrong things. And I thought that was my salvation, that I would find my path by the external success. And I was wrong.
What were you actually doing? What types of things?
Well, I don't want to go into too much detail, but I just wasn't living a very peaceful existence. And, you know, you can imagine I had a house in the hills and things, you know, got interesting at times. And I remember I was basically doing everything I was doing in London, you know, in the sense that I was thinking to myself, success was the answer, you know, throwing big parties was the answer, just connecting with all the wrong people was the answer. And that went on for seven, eight years, until 2013, when I couldn't do it anymore. I was running a production company in LA, and again, I had no spiritual roots. My answer about the spiritual roots happened later. It happened after the kindness diaries. Those 7-8 years were, I wouldn't give them up. I'm happy I did them, but I don't want to do them again. Yeah. And it was an interesting journey.
Yeah. I mean, what's interesting also is that you have this month-long experience.
Mm.
It closes the door on this old thing. It opens you to the idea that kindness can exist.
Mm.
And then you land in LA.
Mm.
And then something kind of closes the door again for the next 7 years.
Just interesting. The door wasn't fully closed.
Okay.
Because I did keep on kind of doing the kindness adventures. I wrote a few books. I was connecting with people. But the bigger part of Leon, let's say, was not open, was not talking about, like, you know, connecting with the heart. He wasn't living from that place. But it was slowly getting bigger until 2013, when it was just too much, and I quit my job again. I resigned from my production company and started traveling the world again. And this time it was like, that's it. This is over. I'm never going back to that job, and I never did. Everything kind of changed. So sometimes when I give my speeches in front of schools or businesses or whatever, I tell them that life isn't always an upward angle, let's say. Sometimes you have to go down to go up.
It's a jagged line.
Exactly.
It always is.
You know, you kind of want it to be like a thing going up, but it doesn't happen that way.
No. I mean, the hero's journey is not, you know, this smooth, easy thing. There will be, you've got your tests and your trials and the things that beat you back and make you show you really understand and you really want it. Was there something that happened that then, like, was this final straw where, like, 7 years into the production company, you're like, okay, the pressure's been building, that, you know, I'm awakening to these things. I'm externally creating things that say, this is what I believe, but there's something inside. And was it again, just this gradual awakening that led to you saying, okay, boom, I'm blowing this up and something profoundly different and new has to start? Or was there something that actually happened?
I think it was gradual, but there were, again, like the Motorcycle Diaries, there was one moment that kind of shifted everything. And I was walking on Hollywood Boulevard and I saw this homeless guy with a sign that said, kindness is the best medicine. And I was like, wow, kindness is the best medicine. It was so profoundly simple, but true. Gave him a little bit of money, chatted with him for a little bit. And it was at that moment that kind of everything made sense. And I ended up deciding to buy a vintage yellow motorcycle with a sidecar. And I was going to drive it from Los Angeles all the way around the world back to Los Angeles with nothing, this time no money. And I would rely on kindness, but this time I would also give something back. So if you were kind to me, there was a chance that I would give you a life-changing gift. Because kindness really is not just a one-way street. It's a two-way street. It's about giving and receiving. So that was the moment. But it had been building. You know, it had been building for years. Mm. You know, I'd throw these parties. I never forget this story. Dennis Rodman, I read it somewhere. He said that he had this massive house wherever he was living. And he would throw these parties with 300-400 people. And he would be in his bedroom just with the door locked reading. And I remember reading that and I thought to myself, wow, that is exactly what I used to do. I would throw these parties and I would end up in my room by myself reading. I was surrounded by people, but I was profoundly alone still, because I still hadn't realized that you had to put down your spiritual roots. You know, so I thought, oh, if I throw a party with 200 people, they'll like me and everything will be great. But it didn't work that way because there was no connection. I didn't feel connected.
Yeah, it's amazing how being alone and being lonely are completely different things. And we conflate them so often.
Mm.
And we just think, well, if we're not alone, if we're surrounded by all these people, how could we possibly be lonely?
Mm.
And yet for so many people, it doesn't solve the loneliness problem. In fact, very often it makes it worse if there are people that you feel disconnected with, because then you start to shame yourself for, like, how can I, like, what's wrong with me that I would still feel alone? It's almost like, how dare I when I'm surrounded with so many beautiful and amazing and intelligent people?
Mm.
Like, what's wrong with me?
Well, I think the way to feel less alone is simply with all your might to open your heart. And I'm not suggesting you immediately open your heart. Sometimes it's not so simple. But to every day try to connect with another human being, try to be a little bit more vulnerable. And as the days go on, it becomes easier and it becomes easier. And then you're living on a different plane. You're living like on the river of love plane.
You ever imagine as a like a ship broker, you saying living on the river of love plane?
Do you know what? No. I mean, no. Seriously, it's just, do you know what? You sometimes forget where you came from.
Yeah.
You know, I sometimes forget, like I was actually in London a couple of days ago and I was walking the streets, and this was, you know, when I was in my worst place, and some of the memories of coming back to me of how I used to be in London, they came back to me and I was like, thank God I'm not doing that anymore. Thank God I'm not experiencing this. Remember, I was walking down a main street, Park Lane in London many, many years ago, and I was so depressed and I was so alone. And I thought to myself, I'm just going to jump in front of a bus. Clearly, I didn't do it, thankfully. But when you're at that point of total brokenness, it's not fun. And sometimes people saved me simply by being kind. And I think that's why I do what I do. Because I was saved by people's kindness. I was saved by people's, you know, making me feel like I mattered. Just simple things. Witnessing my pain. Because sometimes we don't witness other people's pain, because our pain is so grand and so destructive that it's impossible to see anyone else's pain.
Yeah, we become, I think, consumed.
Yeah.
Without judgment. I mean, we're all living in our own special things, and we're all dealing and grappling with whatever it is that's personal to us.
Yeah.
So you reach this point where you buy a motorcycle with a sidecar and decide this new adventure needs to start where you going to travel literally 24,000 miles around the world in this thing, this time starting out with no money and giving back along the way too, when you feel in some way compelled to do that. What's the intention with this going into it? And was this sort of like were you calling this the Kindness Diaries when you started it? Was this designed also to create a series as you're going along?
It was designed to create a series, but we had no one who wanted to buy it. So I just said, let's do it. And people were like, well, who's going to buy it? I was like, I have no idea, but we're doing it anyway. All right. So we did it. And I think the intention, to be honest, in that moment, I was at a low, and my intention was like I did with the Amazing Adventures show I did, it was kind of to free myself and to become free. And then free by connecting again. And then when I finished it, I realized, and I think it was during that journey that I realized something happened on that journey. I realized that if I just spent my life trying to free myself, that wasn't a life well lived. And that now after the journey, I had kind of freed myself. Still not perfect, but I kind of freed myself. And now it became about sharing it with as many people as possible to try in some way and free them. Because I'd read books that had freed me, I'd watched shows that had freed me, I'd listened to speakers that had freed me, helped along the way. So I wanted to do that and free others through entertainment, not through preaching. So you'd watch a show about a guy on a yellow motorcycle, and you'd think you're just watching a show about a guy on a yellow motorcycle, but really you're having your heart opened and you're having a mirror placed in front of you. And that mirror is showing you your own kindness, your own heart, your own magnificence. A wise man once said to me, what you see in others is in you. Because I would always say, oh, I love Martin Luther King, or I love Winston Churchill, or I love Gandhi. And he said that to me, what you see in them is clearly in you. So that's what I want the Kindness Diaries to do, to like open up people's hearts, to be like, okay, I'm not this bad human being, or there are good human beings out there.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times.
Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
And by the way, this eventually does become a series, which is now viewable on Netflix, and we'll link to that in the show notes as well. As you're filming this, you started in LA again, right? From what I remember.
Yes, we started in LA.
And the first part of the journey is back across the United States.
Yes.
To the East Coast, which is kind of interesting, right? So it's like you're sort of like tracking back from like that place you started the earlier journey from. I remember watching a couple days into it, you had met so many different people already. People have given you food. People have given you gas for the motorcycle. People have given you shelter. And there was a moment, I don't remember where you were in the country, but you approached a man and you asked him if you could go home with him, if you could sleep with him. And he looked at you and there was a pause. And you could see in his face he was struggling. And he said, "Well, I'm homeless." Tell me more about that moment, that experience.
That was an experience that changed me. So I'd go up to people in the streets and I would say to them, "Can I stay in your house tonight?" And they would mostly say no, but that's fine. Some would say yes, clearly, otherwise I wouldn't have been able to do it. And I asked this guy, "Say, can I stay in your house tonight?" And he goes, "Look, I'm really sorry, but I'm homeless." So I felt all ashamed. I was about to walk off. And he turns around and he says, "Do you know what? If you want, you can stay with me tonight. I'll feed you, I'll protect you, and I'll give you some clothes." And I was not expecting that. And I thought to myself, "Leon, there is no way that I'm going to let you sleep on the streets of Pittsburgh tonight. It's just not going to happen." But there was a little part of me that says, "Leon, tonight you are sleeping on the streets of Pittsburgh." So I listened to that voice, ended up going with him to his camp, and he did everything he said he would do. He fed me, protected me, and he gave me some clothes. And he taught me, his name was Tony. I'm still in touch with him years later. He's living in Florida now. And he taught me that true wealth is not in our wallets, but it's in our hearts. And he taught me something else too. He said, he taught me that kindness is free. And if a homeless man with nothing can be kind, then I have no excuse. If a homeless man with nothing can be kind, then you have no excuse. So it was really life-changing, really deeply.
I remember as you were leaving him, he came out and he gave you some of his clothes to take with you.
You did indeed. Good old Tony.
So you move on from there and continue and start this around the world adventure, accepting kindness from other people. And at the same point, giving. you leave the United States fairly quickly, and that takes you into a whole universe of other countries of developed and developing worlds. Along the way, what were the moments or stories or interactions that shocked you, surprised you, really stood out in a powerful way to you? I'm sure there were so many.
Yeah, I mean, there really were a lot. I remember meeting these musicians, these buskers in Aix-en-Provence in France. And they were just playing their music, which was beautiful. And then they went up and they asked for some money, and people gave them money. And they were from Benin. And I ended up talking to them and telling them what I was doing, and they offered to put me up for the night. And they had nothing, really, but they had everything. And again, it was a lesson. Because just after Aix-en-Provence, I went to Saint-Tropez, which is filled with people with money. And, you know, I decided to like try and ask people if I could stay on their yachts. Didn't work, you know, but the street busker from Africa let me stay with them. So it's kind of interesting sometimes how that works. I think when people with money sometimes have a standoffish attitude, they think you're trying to get something from them. What do you want from me? But those without, they're used to people helping them. They're used to helping others. And that was a really interesting difference I found in society, let's say.
Yeah. I mean, maybe part of it also is that they understand on a lived, embodied level what it's like to exist with very little and how powerful the simple act of kindness can be. Maybe they've experienced it more often and more readily in their own lives.
I think the greatest thing that you can give another human being is to actually see them. And when you see someone, you hear them, you show them that they matter. And the most destructive thing you can do for another human being is not to see them. That leads to pain, leads to anger, leads to hate, leads to the dark side, as Yoda would say.
Yeah. I wonder if part of that equation is also to allow yourself to be seen for who you are.
Yeah. That's the tricky part. But you see, that's it. Because to allow yourself to be seen is to allow yourself to be vulnerable. And to allow yourself to be vulnerable means that you could be squashed by another human being. And that's why most people hide behind walls and hide behind masks, because they don't want to be vulnerable, because it's risky.
As you headed through this journey into more developing worlds, how did the experience change?
It was harder to find people that were willing to let down their barriers, to let down their walls, to take off their masks. But you can do it. You can make anyone take down their mask. The way to do it is simply to connect with them about something that they like. Like, for example, it's easy for me to connect to someone in England who likes football. Done. You know, if you're wherever you are in the world, sometimes people say to me, how on earth do you connect with people like that? And I tell them, find something that the other person likes and the other person is passionate about and talk to them about it and find something that you both have in common. There's always something you have in common. Oh, I don't have anything in common. Okay. Does the other person have a kid? Yes. Do you have a kid? Yes. Well, there you go. You have something in common. Talk about being a parent.
As the journey continues, eventually you go full circle and come back. And again, this incredible, intense, emotional, round the world, eye-opening, heart-opening journey happens. And yet once again, you're back. How do you handle that?
I got ill physically for months. I remember coming home and the adrenaline wore off again. And I ended up breaking up with my girlfriend. It wasn't good. You know, it wasn't good. Because sometimes people say to me sometimes, they're like, Leon, you're always running. And they were right. I was. And my journeys were me running away. To a certain degree. I mean, I ran towards the light, but I had to come home. Yeah. And coming home was where the challenges were. It's kind of easier when you're on the road. You're traveling, you're connecting, you're in somewhere different every day. But yeah, it was very difficult. Depressed, feeling alone, no sense again, not no sense of purpose, because I had a purpose at that stage, but just no spiritual roots, no groundedness, no ability to truly share in daily life. Yes, you can put a camera in front of me and I can share, but can you do that in your daily life? Can you connect with people properly without a camera in front of you? And that, after I came back from the Kindness Diaries 1, was a challenge.
So where do you go from there? How do you get back to a place where things are okay?
A lot of therapy, a lot of meditation.
repeating itself here.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I tell people because they send me messages all the time, how are you always so happy? And I say, look, I'm not always so happy. Trust me. You know, I'm like you. I have good days and I have very bad days. I just make an effort to keep on going. I read a lot of books. I had people that helped me. I had wise people that guided me. And I sat in front of a therapist for probably is 1,000 hours. Many people, they kind of like committed to their jobs. They're committed to their families. But how many people are committed to themselves, are committed to finding their magic and finding their way through their pain? For whatever reason, I had that. And that's what freed me. I had that. I'll share my pain. I tell people, share your pain. For if you don't share your pain, it'll stay in you and it'll be like a cancer and it'll get worse and it'll get worse. Cry. Like sometimes, you know, people cry and they're like, oh, I'm so sorry, I'm crying. I'm like, don't be sorry. It's beautiful. Cry as much as you want. Let it out. So share your pain. That was one of the things that got me out of it. But yes, there was, like I said, it's like a jagged line. It's not like a straight line. It's bad things happen. There's that famous book. What is it? Good things happen to bad people? No, bad things happen to good people.
and also it's like, you know, the process of awakening is not an easy one. And very often what bubbles up is both, you know, like the light and the dark. You know, like the beauty and the struggle. And, you know, I think sometimes we get a hit of the beauty and we start thinking, well, maybe there's a way to just have that. And we chase that and only that. The struggle is always there until you figure out a way to move through it.
Do you know what I've realized? And I'm not sure that I would have kept going had I realized this. But I've realized that, let's say you have a connection with the divine. And you're like so high on life. Unfortunately, there is further to fall, you know? So I've had these moments lately where I'm like connected to the divine and I'm like, oh my God, I've made it. And then 3 hours later, I'm like swimming in like a sea of really bad stuff. And that's the price you pay, you know? That's the price you pay for never giving up, keep on going, laying spiritual roots. There is good and there is bad. There is terrible and there is fantastic. And instead of like living in like the, like this nether world of like being disconnected so you don't suffer and you don't enjoy, you have to deal with both of them. Mm. And that's not fun. It's fun when you're high on life, but it's not fun when you're not.
Yeah. And I think it's related to how we define a successful life in no small part, which is like so much of it is about happiness rather than meaningfulness. Mm. And I feel like, you know, when we use happiness as the ultimate gauge of a life well lived, we end up constantly beating ourselves up because nobody can be that all the time. Mm. And it's the polarities that let you understand when there's good stuff happening. It's like great research on the fact that the most fulfilling life is what scientists are now calling an emo-diverse life, where you have the full sweep of emotional experiences. Not just perpetually happy or perpetually this. We need contrast to know when we're in one place or the other.
Yeah, I get it, but it's not fun.
And like we don't necessarily need dark to realize the light. So you start to emerge from this and to rebuild to a certain extent, and you're speaking and doing all sorts of other stuff around this and writing. Then at that point too, your most recent book, Go Be Kind, I thought it was really interesting given this narrative because you spent so many years going out on these extreme round the world, like cross country adventures to find this place. And it almost feels like you've you've written a book now, which is essentially, it's a month of things that any human being can do in the context of their own lives without having to go out on the road and make these massive sweeping gestures. It almost feels like this was written for you, to convince yourself that, like, can I actually experience all of these things and feel these things that I have traveled the world to experience without running anywhere, but actually just being?
Do you know, that's really interesting that you just said that. Like, that you said that it's like written for you to prove to yourself that you can do it in everyday life. Because I would do it when I was out on the road and I would come home and I would fall apart. The beauty of kindness is that it's universal. So you can write it for a 10-year-old, you can write it for a 110-year-old. I have a very close friend who has a 9-year-old daughter, and they sent me a picture of them doing the book to get the journal together. That was so beautiful, because that's what this is all about. It's about A, connecting people. It's about remembering that we are kind, that it's part of who we are. It wasn't written for anyone in particular. It was written for all of us.
Mm. I also like the fact that it's not so much a book that you read, it's a journal that you do.
It's really a journal about inspiring people to know that you don't need a yellow motorbike. You don't need a 50-year-old yellow Beetle to go around the world. You just need to wake up in the morning and make a commitment to yourself to treat other people with a dignity and a respect and a grace that you would want to be treated, and to know that you're not perfect and neither are they. And you don't have to wake up every morning, go out and be Gandhi, because believe it or not, not even Gandhi was Gandhi. So yeah, that's I love that. That's another, yes, you should become my agent.
We'll talk after this. It's interesting because I think so, as I'm a writer also, and so many writers I know, like, we write to answer the problems that we have personally or to answer the questions we have personally, or to somehow, almost anyone I know, especially that writes in the world of prescriptive or self-help or personal development or just living a better life, human potential, I think, you know, like, you write because you hope that what you're putting out into the world is useful to other people. And at the same time, in some way, it's like you're scratching your own itch. Like, it's such a common experience I've seen. I know for me it is.
Mm. Yeah, and I guess, you know, a lot of people, they would say to me, I can't do this. I can't be kind. I have a job. I have to raise a family. I don't have enough money to go around the world with nothing. And I say to them, all you have to do is moment to moment, best endeavors, show up with love in your heart. That's all you have to do. You don't have to do anything else. Just do that and see what happens.
Hmm. I can get on board with that. Feels like a good place for us to come full circle as well. So, naming this a good life project, if I offer up the phrase to live a good life, what comes up?
Follow your heart. Live with kindness. And share your gifts with as many people as you can.
Thank you. Thank you so much for listening. And thanks also to our fantastic sponsors who help make this show possible. You can check them out in the links we have included in today's show notes. And while you're at it, if you've ever asked yourself, what should I do with my life? We have created a really cool online assessment that will help you discover the source code for the work that you're here to do. You can find it at sparkatype.com. That's sparkatype.com, or just click the link in the show notes. And of course, if you haven't already done so, be sure to click on the subscribe button in your listening app so you never miss an episode. And then share the love. If there's something that you've heard in this episode that you would love to turn into a conversation, share it with people and have that conversation. Because when ideas become conversations that lead to action, that's when real change takes hold. See you next time.